Now war comes to hurt them. During World War II, there was plenty of activity in our village. Not only was labour short, men and women were fully occupied by work on the land. They also had to fit in many duties connected with the war effort. The Home Guard enlisted a number of men, and under the training of two old soldiers, William Rushbrook and Albert Goodkiss, they were put through their paces. And what a difficult task for these two elderly but active officers. My brother reached the position of corporal, and he often recounted some amusing stories about some of these raw recruits. They hardly knew their left foot from their right. One dark winter's night, the company had a special exercise which involved blacking their faces and getting camouflaged and creeping along hedges and about the lanes and fields. Going home after this activity, my brother, completely forgetting his blackened face and dishevelled appearance, and armed with his rifle, he went home to his wife, who was so scared by the spectacle, promptly passed out in a dead faint. An outstanding member of the Home Guard was the village fishmonger, Frank Bristow, a big burly man with a loud voice. He had been a sailor in his younger days. He could often be heard from a long distance at his post outside the local post office, challenging those who came anywhere nearby. He used to say, "Friend or foe?" Even people he knew well and lived nearby received this same challenge, and with his rifle at the ready, one dare not ignore this request. What a queer sight these men were, with their ugly, ill-fitting khaki uniforms, so often looking like comic soldiers. The air raid wardens looked far smarter in navy blue suits and peak caps and berets. They paraded the streets every night, and woe betide anyone who showed the tiniest glimmer of light. I think they enjoyed their position of authority, and with the village policemen made sure that even keyhole lights were not visible. At the outbreak of war, the local policeman, Sergeant Lees, who was on the reserve list, was called up. Sergeant Lees was a likeable, pleasant man who married a teacher from the village school and was happily settled in the police house only a very short while before he was called up. After only a few weeks, the sad news was received of his death on active service. He was one of the first casualties. A former village policeman, an elderly retired constable, took over the duties until the end of the war. He was PC Alfred Hudson. Early on, a very enthusiastic branch of the Red Cross was formed, run by Dr. and Mrs. Fairweather. They organized classes for the members. The lodge, Dr. Fairweather's home, was its headquarters. In fact, the lodge became the busiest house in Haddam. Not only was it the first aid post, but the big business of organizing homes for the evacuees was done there, with all the problems involved in that undertaking. Mrs. Fairweather was tireless and hard-working. It was amazing the amount of work and organizing she did. One day she said to me, "You know, I've got into a dreadful state. If I sit down and do nothing, I get such a guilty feeling." Her house was chock-a-block full of blankets, gas masks, first aid equipment, stretchers, clothing and food for evacuees. The evacuees sent to the village were mostly Jewish, from the East End of London, the Whitechapel slum area. I shall never forget one of the first coach loads to arrive. They came on a Sunday afternoon. They were a number of expectant mothers with young children. With their gas masks and bundles of belongings, they were a pathetic sight, frightened and bewildered. And although they were given good homes and every care, they could not settle. They missed the noise and bustle of Whitechapel, with its fish and chip shops, its cinemas and pubs. And before a week had passed, many had returned home, preferring, as they said, to be bombed out in London than to stagnate and die of boredom in a quiet country village.